Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Zimmerman with Becker's Hospital Review. Thank you for tuning into the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Becker's Hospital Review is proud to welcome Dr. Denise Brown as the guest for today's podcast. Dr. Brown is Chief Growth Officer at Vituity, a physician-led and owned multi-specialty partnership of more than 5,000 doctors and clinicians providing care for nearly 8 million patients each year. With a range of expertise spanning 9 acute care specialties across 450 practice locations nationally, Vituity is uniquely positioned at the forefront of care transformation. The focus of our conversation today is the changing face of acute care delivery in the emerging consumer-based healthcare landscape. We'll uncover how new approaches to patient-centric medicine lead to better integrated care, improved provider and patient satisfaction, and our changing expectations of where and how care is delivered. I'd like to welcome Dr. Brown and begin our discussion on this evolution in healthcare that's bringing care to patients when and where they're needed. Dr. Brown, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's dive in then to start off. I just love to know how you personally define patient-centric care.
Well, gosh, I mean, everything old is new again, right? I mean, back in the good old days, I would have had my little black bag and I would have come to your house and I would have looked in on you and you would have called me and maybe you would have given me a chicken or something for my services. And I was part of the community and you were part of my community. And I think really what we're hearkening back to is sort of exactly that, only the black bag looks slightly different and the way we're interacting looks slightly different. And so I guess to my mind, it's taken the care where it needs to be. For a long time, we've sort of made people come to us. And I think we've finally all recognized that care can happen in a lot of different locations. And it really needs to be kind of location neutral. So I think when we talk about patient-centric, it's what does a person want first, maybe, but also what do they need? And how do those two things fit together? And then how do I get the care to them? So it might be sitting in your living room on a Zoom call. It might be coming to the hospital. It might be me going to visit you. It might be at an urgent care. It might be all of those different places. And I think we have to make sure that we don't limit ourselves by either geography or by technology when we talk about patient-focused care. And so I think it's what you need when you need it.
Right. And then so the key there is like you have all these different sort of channels for engagement. You have in-person, you have virtual, as you mentioned. And now the work is really figuring out like what's right. You know what I mean? Like what's clinically, you know, effective for certain different situations and really doing that work and figuring that all out, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the challenge, right? And for a long time, we have sort of put that onus on the patient, right? It's like, you decide if you need to come to the emergency room. Well, maybe you're not in the best position to make that decision. Maybe you need a little help with that. And you probably don't need to be on hold for, you know, 8 hours while you're waiting for, you know, an advice nurse at a call center somewhere. So how do I make sure that you can get the care you need where you need it, but within a reasonable timeframe? And I think that's going to be the sort of challenge to all of us as we move forward with this. So for example, one of the things that we do is kind of like a virtual front door to the emergency department. Mm-hmm. So you can log on to a health system website, you can click on the button, you're actually interacting with an emergency medicine physician who says, hey, you know what, Brian, hang up the phone and call 911. You need to come see me right now. And I'll be ready for you when you get here. Or, hey, buddy, I got it. We're going to call in a prescription. We're going to have you see so-and-so tomorrow morning, something like that, so that you're not having to make those sorts of decisions. And I think that's going to hold true even more as we push care further and further outside of the walls of the hospital. You're going to need to have somebody who's kind of coordinating where all that's happening, or we're going to have a lot of stuff get lost in the ether.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. Can you talk about then what's driving these changes, right? Like you mentioned everything is old is new again, right? So what's really been the impetus for that shift? Can you talk about that?
Well, I mean, I don't think we can talk about it without talking about COVID, because I think that was certainly the kind of Miracle-Gro that has really sort of pushed all of this stuff to happen quickly. But I think we've been seeing this, right, in other industries for some time. And often healthcare is, we're a little bit slower. We're a little bit more, you know, kind of like, let's see what happens. But just like going to the bank, right? I mean, you can't even find a bank to go to anymore, right? You pretty much do most of it on your phone. If you can't do it on your phone, you do it with the chat bot. If the chat bot doesn't work, then you can call and make an appointment. So I'm okay with that. I actually like it better than waiting for the bank to open on Saturday morning. And I think we see that with grocery delivery, and we see it with Amazon, and we see it with all these different things where, you know, this sort of consumer power, if you will, to make things happen in a time frame that's convenient to me, the consumer. And so I think that obviously spills over into all facets of our lives, and it's spilling over into healthcare. And I say, hey, we're glad you're here. And so I think that's a lot of it. But then I think, you know, with COVID and people quite honestly being perfectly reasonably afraid to come into places to seek care, we needed to bring the care to them. I mean, the need for care doesn't go away just because you don't want to go to the emergency room or you don't want to go to your doctor. So what do we have to do? We got to go to you. And so I think that has been those two kind of factors coming together has really created the perfect environment. And so many health systems across the country did so many really cool things with this sense of urgency that it might have taken us, you know, a decade to kind of like push into practice. And now that we're sort of hopefully coming through to the other side, as we kind of walk through that threshold, I think we just have to, we have to challenge ourselves to not backslide and kind of fall back into those kind of familiar patterns and recognize that some of these things are here to stay and they're for the better.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've talked about before on previous panels we've been on together. I think you made the point. I think it was you who used the phrase that really the pandemic really gave folks license to act.
Yes.
To really get things done that have maybe been in the works for some time or been in the sort of nascent versions of these programs to really accelerate them forward. And the pandemic was really a galvanizing force there.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, and unifying too, right? Because, and you don't have those, I mean, I don't want to call it an opportunity because it's a tragedy in progress, but it really, if you try to look at the silver lining of it, it is a unifying force where everyone is aligned towards the same goals. And that doesn't happen very often. You know, I mean, You've always got people's competing interests and budgets and line items and all this stuff. So the idea that we were all very clearly rowing in the same boat together was powerful. And so now I think it behooves us to try to hold on to that sense.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And just from my perspective as somebody who engages with folks in the industry, it's like I felt that too. Like I just felt it when I was talking to leaders, like that just the idea that everybody is all in across like all stakeholders. So it was like bottling that up and taking it with us into the future is going to be so important.
Right. And even the community aspects of it. I mean, I think those are like, we can't not sing their praises enough. So it's like the, you know, where else do you see people dropping food off at the hospital, bringing their mask, you know, like doing anything, all hands on deck kind of mentality. And I think that's what healthcare deserves. And so as we start talking about what does it mean for acute hospitals and whatnot to develop patient-centric models, we've got to remember that the community is a key component in all of this. And we got to make sure that we are considering them at every opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Then I do want to ask how is the hospital at home and remote care and all these technologies sort of affecting and transforming brick and mortar facilities? I think that's an important piece of this, right?
Yeah, and you know, I guess I would say some of it the jury's out, right? I mean, it is still pretty new. We were very fortunate to be able to partner with a large health system in California to actually provide their hospital at home, all of their care. And so we've learned really quickly how to pull it off. We've learned how much satisfaction it brings. And when I say that, I mean that for patients and for families and absolutely for providers. And you would never imagine that as a hospitalist, that's what I do for a living, that I would be like, I'm taking care of 150 patients today. Yeah. But it was really quite energizing. It's also great care because you see people where they're at. So I can be looking at the screen and say, hey, you know what? I want you to move that over because I'd hate for you to trip on your way to the bathroom, or, you know, just little things like that where people really feel like, oh my gosh, these people are taking care of me. And then when you look at the outcomes, which is what really matters in the end, the readmission rates are much lower, the satisfaction scores are much higher, all the infectious potential complications essentially go away. So while there is some resource lift at the beginning, I think when it's all said and done, it's a really good experience all the way around.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go. Keep going.
Well, so what does that mean for your bricks and mortar, right? I mean, right. I think that's really the question. And so I'm not sure I have the answer. I do think what it means, and I don't think this is going to come out like some great epiphany, but I think the hospital of a decade from now is essentially a large ICU and probably room for some OB for people who can't or feel uncomfortable delivering at home and for very complicated surgeries and their post-op recovery. But so our acuity in-house under the big roof is going to skyrocket. And all of those things that used to sort of live on a med-surg floor are probably going to be at home. Or if they are in med-surg, they're there one night until we can get everything set up and then you're at home, right? So I think we're going to need to reconfigure how our beds are allocated. I think we're going to have to figure out what our nursing staffing ratios look like, because the staffing ratio of today probably doesn't make sense even 2 years from now. How are we training those people? And then who do we have going out to the home? I mean, that's a whole different, it really is a sort of an opportunity to kind of like do that thing you might've done in seventh grade, like create a country, right? We get to kind of reimagine, like, what does it mean to be a nurse and where do you do that? What does it mean to be an emergency medicine physician and where does that happen? We've been really, really constrained by location, and it's completely artificial.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's scary, but also really exciting simultaneously.
Yeah, I mean, it's really gonna be fascinating to see how everything evolves over the next few years and 10 years. I mean, it's just such a transformative time. I mean, it seems almost cliche to say, but it's such a transformative time in healthcare. It's true.
Yeah, it's cool. And then I think that, you know, it also becomes, and this is where, again, I think we can't lose sight of the community piece. We need to do a lot of education. And when I say we, I mean the House of Medicine, as in physicians and nurses and hospital leadership. We've got to go out into the community and explain why hospital at home works, explain why we may be shutting down their community hospital or transitioning it into a different, you know, set of skills and things that may be where you come for intensive physical therapy, but you're not spending the night in the hospital. What does that mean to different communities? How can we make sure that they understand we're still going to, you know, have them in the palm of our hands, but we don't need to have neurosurgery on call at the hospital down the street. We need to be able to refer people where they need to go or to have those experts beam in when necessary. So there's going to be a lot of cultural shifts, and it's not just the providers. It's the recipients of care as well that we need to make sure that we're kind of bringing them along as we go.
Yeah, right. Dr. Brown, I just got a couple more questions here, but the follow-up there is like, can you talk about how you envision that working, really getting out into the community? Are partnerships a big deal there? How do you really, like, you know, build that trust with patients? And it just strikes me as such an important thing, like, in general right now, when you see, just the vaccination campaigns or vaccine hesitancy, is like providers, like organizations like Vituity or major health systems as potentially being like a trusted source for community. And can you just talk about how you're thinking about partnerships and patient education more broadly?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think I'd love to be able to say that doctors and hospitals are trusted partners, but I don't think that's true all across the country. And I think that we have a lot of work to do there. So, so how do we do that work? Well, it's not just putting on my white coat and shaking my finger at you, right? It's finding community partners. It's finding spiritual partners. It's finding teachers. It's finding the people who have been part of that community and going out and doing outreach with them to be able to kind of encourage those sorts of changes. And so I think as we kind of move into this health in place, you know, seeing people where they are, like remembering that our community partnerships become more and more important, because what we know to be true, and I'll use our example of medication-assisted therapy for opiate addiction, I can give you your prescription for medication and you can talk to the social worker and or the counselor, but the person who makes the biggest difference in what ends up happening is the peer navigator. It's the person who's walked a mile in the moccasins who can say, hey, I've been there before, man. And here's what helped me and let me help you. So it's that sense of community and belonging that I think we have to be able to make sure that we create. And that's going to be different depending on what, you know, community that you're in. And so I think that that to me is really kind of a new way of hospitals to kind of work with patients that they serve. It's not just philanthropy. It's actual like care and peer navigation. They've got to be, you know, sort of trusted members of the care team, and the care is going to be pushed out more. So if it's having a clinic at the senior center or making sure that, you know, we're down at the parade or, you know, whatever it is, I think we're going to have to get a little bit more creative so that the hospital, the physicians, all of those people are really seen as members of that community. And we're all working together because this is going to be a care team like, you know, we've never seen before. It's the sister and the friend down the street and the pastor and the teacher and the nurse and the doctor and the health administrator. Those are all the components that are going to make this work.
It's fascinating. The question I want to ask, this is sort of my last question for you, is thinking about really integrating patient-centric models of care. You talked previously, I think, like, you know, for organizations getting started, it can be sort of a resource lift at the beginning, you mentioned. So can you talk about like what are some other barriers? What else can get in the way of folks really bringing patient-centric models into fruition? And what can maybe listeners out there do to push back against those barriers?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually think one of the biggest barriers is, you know, you gotta point the mirror at yourself first. I think the culture of the practice of medicine has to change, right? So we as an organization, I guess I would say, of physicians, whether it's emergency medicine or inpatient medicine, we've got to look about how what we're doing shifts, and we've got to kind of be willing to do that. And we need to be pushing that rather than kind of being pulled reluctantly along. So I think that's barrier number one, is how do you sort of retrain someone who's spent, you know, 20 years in training to say, okay, well, you're used to practicing in an emergency department, but what you practice is emergency medicine. And that can be a variety of different settings. Same holds still for hospital medicine, which I think we clearly have to rename. But, you know, I used to think I had to make rounds in the hospital, and now I can make rounds on my computer. And am I just as effective? I am. So I think there's a lot of physician mindset. So I think that's number one. I do think the technology seems overwhelming, and that's probably very true for smaller hospital systems or independent hospitals. But I think there are lots of partnerships out there that are worth exploring. And I think that it kind of behooves all of us to not reinvent the wheel repeatedly, right? I mean, there are things we can all learn from one another. And part of our challenge of medicine is that we kind of stay in our little spots, right? And we don't look elsewhere. So now is the time for kind of reaching hands across the aisle, so to speak, or across town, to make sure that we're leveraging the resources. And then I think what we really need to make sure is there's a lot of stuff out there, right? And how do we capture that? And so that's why I think it's great for health systems to kind of go all in on this stuff, because your patients are going to do it anyway. So I'm either going to drive down the road and be like, oh, there's a billboard and I can get my prescription online. I just click this button and I interact with someone. Well, no one knows about that. So when we're talking about potential outcome-based value care, if your patients are going all these other places and you don't know about it, then are you really providing the care you think you're providing? So I think it's important for health systems to have some umbrella over that. And that's where I think we can really be the sort of key to integrating all of those disparate components, because we've got to bring it all together. If it's just more noise and less signal, then, you know, then we've not really accomplished our purpose. So I think that's sort of number two. I think that like AI components of some of this stuff are great and they give us the opportunity. There's a lot of stuff that we can probably do. I mean, like Amazon is amazing. Like, how do they know that that's everything I needed and it was all the bot, right? So like we need to learn from other industries to make sure that we're streamlining what it is that we're doing. But then I think the biggest barrier, or the one that I'm the most concerned about, is this is all great for the people who have great Wi-Fi and they have a laptop and they've got an iPhone or Android, you know, What about the people who don't? What about those people who don't have access to that? How are we reaching them? And so what I don't want to see happen is, oh yeah, this is great, but then it drives a wedge even further between those who have access and those who don't. And so that's the part where I think the community outreach stuff becomes increasingly more important, whether it's mobile clinics or, you know, people going out with their paramedic runs, or I think there's lots of different options and they can all be sort of tailored to fit the size of community that you're located in. But we got to make sure we're not leaving those folks behind, because they're the ones who deserve and need the care the most. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such an important point, especially when the industry is sort of just, I don't know, expanding access to care is so important. And really, like, as we've seen during the pandemic, and just makes a lot of sense that these models, this technology and stuff, that it doesn't further the gap between those who have access and those who don't. So such an important point, Dr. Brown. Yeah.
And that's, I think, our sort of moral duty, right? To make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Well, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Do you have any closing thoughts for us today?
No, I guess I would just say, you know, we shouldn't feel limited by what we did yesterday, because today is a very interesting day and tomorrow's going to be even better.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Again, always a pleasure. I also want to thank Vituity for sponsoring today's podcast. You can tune in to more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.